This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. This is Asma Farhad of The People Speak. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to The People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or by going to our site at thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to our shows live, as well as our past shows on our iPod Ready archive section. That's thepeoplespeakradio.net. Excuse me. If you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen live via satellite. All you have to do is go to the website for details. Tonight we have back with us a wonderful guest, Mary Shulman, who we just absolutely, just as a wealth of information. Mary is a patient advocate and a writer who transformed her own issues with thyroid as a mission to educate and empower other patients who struggle with thyroid, autoimmune, and weight loss challenges. Now, Mary is an author of a number of best-selling books on thyroid disease and weight loss, and she is just profound. Her last book was Living Well with Hypothyroidism, and that's what we interviewed on her on that time. Now we have Mary's new book, The Menopause Thyroid Solution, Overcome Menopause by Solving Your Hidden Thyroid Problems. Now, this was huge. Welcome to the welcome back to the show, Mary. It's a delight having you back.
Thank you, Basma. It's such a pleasure to be back on.
Mary, this book is just, you know, you and I were talking in the background before the show started, and it's just amazing. I'd like to ask you briefly to, before we get into the actual situation with the menopause, can you basically give people a little breakdown on what the thyroid is, how it works, and some of the problems that can develop and how it affects the health of an individual, especially women in these cases?
Absolutely. Well, the thyroid is a very small gland. It's about the size of an ounce at the most, and it looks like a little butterfly. It's located behind and below the area of the Adam's apple in the neck. And the thyroid gland is your master gland of energy and metabolism. So it's producing hormones that are going to every tissue, cell, gland, and organ in the body to deliver energy and oxygen. So it's kind of like, in a lot of ways, the gas tank that's keeping the car running. And when our thyroid doesn't work properly for a variety of reasons, it can either become overactive or underactive. When the thyroid is overactive, which is not as common a problem, but it does happen, we see people losing weight dramatically, having panicky feelings, high heart rate, high blood pressure, feeling overheated, and feeling very anxious and not being able to sleep. The much more common problem, however, is a hypothyroid or underactive thyroid condition. And when that takes place, what we see there is fatigue and exhaustion. People are either gaining weight or they're not able to lose weight on a great diet and exercise. They're feeling depressed or moody. They may have memory or brain fog problems, finding it hard to concentrate. They may be losing hair. Skin can get out of control. You'll start to feel very dry, or the skin can become almost scaly. You'll have puffiness in the hands and feet, constipation. And then for women, we also see low sex drive. Some women will also have disrupted menstrual periods or an erratic menstrual period. And in some women, again, going into the menopause period, they may have an exacerbation or worsening of their menopause symptoms. Women also will oftentimes have trouble getting pregnant. They may have more recurrent miscarriages and difficulty breastfeeding. And these are just the tip of the iceberg of the full range of symptoms that we tend to see with an underactive thyroid.
Now, outside of a lot of those, for those male listeners in our audience, and we do have a lot of men listening, a lot of these thyroid symptoms, I don't want you guys to feel neglected here. a lot of those thyroid symptoms, the symptomology is prevalent in men as well. They just don't manifest in the areas of obviously the menstruation and stuff like that.
So exactly.
So there are a lot of problems that men, I think, are undereducated about when it comes to the thyroid.
Definitely. I think everyone is undereducated, both women and men. The reason that the issue tends to focus more on women, though, is that women are 7 to 10 times more likely to develop thyroid problems than men. But men do develop them, and most often we see it in men that are older. So the over 60 crowd of men are the highest risk group among men, although men can develop thyroid problems as children, in their teens, and at any point during adulthood. It's most common for them as they get older, whereas women are developing it at various points along the way. Also, again, when they're over 40 seems to be the highest risk point, but again, it's much more prevalent. We think there's as many as 40 to 50 million people with thyroid problems in the U.S., and the vast majority of them are, in fact, women.
Very interesting. Okay, now, as I heard you describing, now, as a woman that has gone through both, I have a very severe hypothyroidism, and I went through surgical menopause about 20 years ago, so I went through the major rift. But if I were to listen to you without knowing what you were describing, Mary, I would say you were describing the symptoms of menopause.
Well, exactly, and that is really what I'm trying to help educate women about, because we've got about 40 million women that are between the ages of 40 and 60, and a substantial number of those women are experiencing a variety of symptoms that they may find uncomfortable. They may be feeling like their weight is redistributing, or they're feeling tired, or they're feeling moody, or a little bit depressed. Their sex drive has gone south. Their periods are erratic. They just are not sure what's going on with their body. And at that age, the assumption is oftentimes, well, in their 40s, the assumption is, well, maybe it's stress, depression, PMS. And as we get later on into our 40s and into our 50s, then we oftentimes will assume, or our doctors will assume for us, well, it's menopause. You know, what do you expect? You're 45, you're 50, you're 55, et cetera. And what I'm trying to let people know is that these symptoms can be symptoms of a thyroid slowdown. So, yes, hormones are changing at this time, but one of the most critical and important hormones of all, the thyroid, is very often the first one to show a slowdown. So I'm calling it thyropause, so to speak. So what I want women to do is to realize that the first step for a woman over 40 who's feeling symptoms like this is to rule out her thyroid, because if she gets a thyroid properly diagnosed and treated, and if that is in fact the cause of her symptoms, she may actually be able to go through her perimenopause and menopause feeling and living and looking well.
Now, you know, this is interesting, but let me ask you, Mary, first of all, how did you come to the conclusion that the challenges of menopause and the thyroid were connected or interconnected? Is this something that you determined through your own issues, or is this something that happened? Is this a scientific research? Is this medical data that were being presented? How did you come to this conclusion?
Well, this is not a conclusion that I've come up with. This is medical fact and information. And in fact, several years ago, the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, the experts on thyroid disease, came out with a report that said that the majority of women in menopausal years were not being asked even about their thyroid and were not getting thyroid tested. So we know that there is a lot of undiagnosed thyroid problems in this group of women in the 40 and above age group. We also know that there's a lot of undiagnosed thyroid disease in general throughout the public. And then if you start to match up those symptoms and you look line for line and you see hair loss, loss of sex drive, erratic periods, fatigue, feeling moody, depression, and you realize that the symptoms are very similar, and the challenge for women and for their doctors is, do I have a thyroid condition? Am I dealing with shifting estrogen and progesterone due to perimenopause, or am I dealing with both? Because that's also something that happens to some women, is we start to see a lot of shifts going on in their hormones, and thyroid is one of those shifts, but we also see progesterone and estrogen shifting as well.
All right. Now, let me ask you this then, Mary. You said something, you called it thyropause, a slowing down of the thyroid. Can you tell us what would create, is it, I mean, obviously I know that, you know, as we age, we're always going to have a slowing down of a lot of our bodily functions, but is this a normal function? Is this normally what happens with the majority of our organs, or is the thyroid specific to this, or how does that work?
Well, what happens is, yes, the thyroid normally does have some level of slowdown as time goes on. So if we look at senior citizens over 70, over 80, they're going to have a little bit slower thyroid than, you know, somebody who's in their 40s, for example. But what happens is when we go into that perimenopausal period, and we start to get out of balance, our estrogen and our progesterone can become imbalanced, that can in itself trigger a thyroid slowdown.
So this slowdown is you know, I just out of curiosity, do men also have that kind of a slowdown?
No, men don't seem to have as much of that issue. They tend to have a little bit more of a slowdown in their 60s. But the hormone changes don't seem to have that effect because men don't have that dramatic drop in hormones like women do as the estrogen and progesterone start to drop fairly dramatically during the perimenopause and menopause period. But what a lot of people don't realize is that estrogen is very similar in terms of its chemical structure to thyroid hormones. So even as our estrogen and progesterone start to drop, if estrogen becomes dominant, so we have too much estrogen in contrast to the progesterone, what can happen is that that estrogen can get in the way of our body's ability to take on the thyroid hormone. So that process of becoming estrogen dominant in itself can, in some cases, be a trigger for thyroid problems. So what happens is there's some natural time aspect that will trigger thyroid problems in some people. The hormone changes are also a trigger for autoimmune diseases in general for some women, and in some cases that can be the trigger for thyroid autoimmune disease. That estrogen-progesterone balance can be a factor. And then also, as women are in their 40s and 50s, we're also seeing a lot of people that have very poor diets, they're not getting enough sleep, and they may be depleting their adrenal system. And if you think about the three hormone legs of the stool, I love that analogy that Dr. Richard Chalmers came up with. And we've got the endocrine leg, which is the thyroid. We've got the adrenal leg, which is the stress hormones. And we've got the reproductive and sex hormone leg, which is our progesterone and estrogen. And all three legs of the stool need to be balanced for us to be able to be sitting on the stool. And any of those three hormone systems get out of balance, then we can start to really feel unwell, and the whole system can get out of balance at the same time.
Well, you know, there's so many questions, but before I go on, there's a couple of questions that we're already getting questions from our audience, and a couple of them are pertinent, I think. Now, Samantha asks, is menopause coming around the average age of 52? And her next part of the question is, do thyroid problems begin at all ages, especially after 30, or is this something that is that can happen at any time?
Well, thyroid problems can certainly begin at all ages. I mean, we see them in women in their 20s. We see them in women postpartum in their 20s and 30s. And certainly as we get into our 40s, it definitely becomes much more common. The average age of menopause, and let's be clear about what we mean by menopause, because sometimes we use these terms and it can be a little confusing. The official definition of menopause is it has been a full calendar year since a woman has had a menstrual period. So everything before that, all the ups and downs and periods that come every 6 months and hot flashes and not feeling well and all that business is typically the perimenopausal period or the premenopause. So a lot of people say, I'm going through menopause, and we refer to the whole process as going through menopause. But really what we're going through is perimenopause, which is that period during things are shifting, hormones are going up and down, and you're still getting a period, maybe not regularly, but, you know, periodically, even a couple times a year, still qualifies you as not being officially menopausal yet. And the thing that was a shock to me, because I'm 47, was that perimenopause can start as early as 10 years before menopause. And the average age of menopause in the United States is about 51 to 52. So most women, on average, are stopping their periods around age 50 to 51. But the perimenopause, the changes, the cycle changes, all the crazy symptoms, that can start when we're 40.
Now, when you say that, you're talking about perimenopause outside of any thyroid connection.
Exactly, yeah, because, you know, certainly we've got women out there that are dealing with perimenopausal symptoms that don't have any underlying thyroid problems. I mean, it's not there's not a one-for-one ratio, so there certainly are women who go naturally through perimenopause and menopause who don't have any underlying thyroid dysfunction. So those are the statistics that apply to them. For women who have autoimmune thyroid problems, we actually see an earlier onset of menopause in those women. So a lot, because there's also autoimmune issues that then target the ovaries and they target some of the other hormone development processes. So sometimes we're seeing women with autoimmune thyroid disease going into perimenopause in their late 30s and actually wrapping up their menopause before they're 50 years old. So it's another reason for women who have thyroid conditions to also be aware of that perimenopause-menopause link.
Now, let me ask you, Mary, when you talk about the perimenopausal process, there is a great fluctuation of hormones during that period of time, up and down. So, and your position is that the thyroid absolutely aggravates that even more and probably over and above. Now, let me ask you this. Is this just, now, what if it's just borderline thyroidism? Borderline is, I don't even know anymore what borderline
right.
is. I mean, my numbers are so dramatic that, that it's almost, I know that we had discussed the TSH levels at being at 10, but that was just an arbitrary number.
Sure.
That they had come up with. So who really knows what borderline is?
Right. Well, and borderline is, you know, the official definition of borderline at this point is still about a TSH of over 5 to 6, between 5 and 6 to 10 is considered borderline. A lot of the physicians who are really signing on to the new guidelines believe that levels above 2.5 to 3 are considered really borderline. And then there are physicians that believe that if you have a family history of thyroid, you have thyroid symptoms, and you have antibodies, even if your thyroid TSH levels or your other blood levels are normal, that you may in fact be symptomatic and you could warrant some treatment for an underactive thyroid. So the definition of who has it and who is on the border, it really depends on the doctors that you talk to. I've also talked with women who have a slightly elevated TSH who feel great and don't need any treatment. I've talked with other women who have the very slightest elevation in TSH and they're miserable, and once they get treated, it's like they have their life and their health back. So it also is unique to us physiologically. Some women are going to be really laid low by even a mild thyroid problem. Other people are walking around with very substantial thyroid problems, and somehow something in their physiology is allowing them to kind of go along without it dramatically affecting them symptom-wise.
Okay, so Mary, I am a woman that's manifesting some symptoms. I've got the brain fog, the fatigue, the depression, the weight gain, this, that, and the other thing. And I go in, and my assumption is because of my age, that this is probably menopause, and I need to go in and talk to the doctor. Where does the onus of responsibility lie? Is this the doctor that, and to be quite honest with you, I don't think all the doctors are doing this, although the thyroid test has become a lot more prevalent in a typical examination, but I don't know if I went into my doctor's office and I said, I'm having symptoms of menopause, would he check my thyroid?
No, and that's the problem. Very
mm-hmm.
often they will not check your thyroid. and you will have to specifically ask for that thyroid test. There's a lot of factors that go into this. I mean, one of them is when we're going into HMOs, the thyroid tests take time, they take money. It's much easier for a doctor to say, well, you're 45, you're 50, your periods are erratic, you're in perimenopause. If you're feeling really bad, let me give you some hormone therapy. And it doesn't cost him anything. He doesn't do any tests. They very rarely will check estrogen, progesterone, or FSH, LH. They're not really going to do those panels. A lot of times doctors are simply prescribing based on the assumption of perimenopause or menopause. It's the same thing if you go in and complain about feeling depressed or stressed out, and you're much more likely to get a prescription for an antidepressant than you are a thyroid test. So I think, you know, the thing, much as I would love to say it's the doctor's responsibility to think about all of the options, the reality of today's healthcare with the 7-minute doctor visits and the fact that many of us are rushed in and out of an HMO office or our insurers will only cover very brief appointments, the reality is we have to be a little bit more of our own advocates. We have to ask the questions, and we have to go in and say, look, doc, I'm 40 or above, and I'm experiencing a variety of symptoms, and yes, it could be perimenopause or menopause, but you know what? I want you to at least rule out my thyroid.
Well, you know, for those of those listeners who have just joined us, we're speaking with Mary Shulman. Mary wrote the book, The Menopause Thyroid Solution, Overcome Menopause by Solving Your Hidden Thyroid Problems. And I agree. You have to be your own advocate. You have to know, and the information is out there. This is a fantastic book, as well as her previous book, Living Well with Hypothyroidism, and some of her other books. Mary's work is extremely comprehensive, and this is what I found. Not only does she help people to understand the nature of the problems themselves, the interconnectedness of the problems, but she also cites case studies that have been going on, interviews with, as she tells you about the types of imaging testing that's available for certain conditions, where to go. There's even lists of doctors that are available that are advocates of this, these kinds of therapies. So there's a lot of information out there if you really are interested, and I highly recommend this. So Mary, let's go on to, now obviously we do understand. Now what I'd like to know is, okay, now that we've come to this connection, Synthroid is not, which is the, or levothyroxine, which is the most commonly used of the medications for hypo or hyperthyroidism. What do you do? Do they really work? I know that you're an advocate of some of the desiccated thyroids, Armour, things like that. What do you recommend?
Well,
as far as alternative things.
Sure. Well, I always recommend, you know, certainly that the best thyroid medicine for each person is the one that works best safely for them. The problem that we have with the medicines is that many doctors have been very inculcated to believe that the only option is the levothyroxine, which is the synthetic version of one thyroid hormone. And the brand names that people would be familiar with would be Synthroid or Levoxyl or Levothyroid or Unithroid. And that is certainly an option that can work for some patients, but it's not the end-all be-all for everyone. Some people need the addition of a second hormone, a T3 hormone, which they add to one of those synthetic drugs in the form of like Cytomel or a generic version of Cytomel or a T3 that's a compounded medicine, and that seems to help people resolve their symptoms more in some cases. And then there is a subset of patients who don't do well on the synthetics at all and do much better with natural desiccated thyroid, which is thyroid that is derived from the gland of pigs. It's porcine thyroid. This is a prescription drug. It's not a natural supplement that's off the, you know, shelf at the vitamin store. This is actually a prescription medication that's been on the market for more than 100 years, and the brand names there that people might recognize would be Armour Thyroid, West Thyroid, and Nature Thyroid. So these are all the options. Unfortunately, if you're going to a conventional doctor, an HMO, most doctors are really going to tell you the only option is levothyroxine, or in some cases even Synthroid. They tend to favor it. It's kind of become the generic term for thyroid medicine for a lot of doctors. And the truth is that you really may have to go through a trial and error process with some different medicines. And frankly, if your doctor is not willing to discuss anything but Synthroid with you, it's probably a good sign that you may need to get a more open-minded doctor who is looking for an answer for you. I mean, if somebody's suffering from blood pressure problems, you know, they're not told there's only one medicine, and if it doesn't work for you, tough. They actually will be tried on one medicine, and if one blood pressure medicine's not working well, they'll try another one. This is the process in medicine everywhere but in thyroid, where we seem to have this really unusual sort of dedication to one drug that doesn't solve everyone's problems necessarily. So patients, again, need to be their own advocates, and they need to say, well, yeah, I know you prefer Synthroid, doctor, but, you know, I really want something that's going to work better for me than this. And, you know, you've got to have a doctor that's willing to at least try options with you.
And unfortunately, because I've come from a long history of dealing with doctors, and in many cases endocrinologists who deal with this type of, they're not really, they get very insulted when you suggest that you're not happy with what they want you to take. They really do,
yeah.
And that's unfortunate.
They do, and, you know, sometimes I wonder. I mean, I've met some very lovely endocrinologists along the way, but I've also found a lot of them to be sort of unusually rigid as a specialty, which is, you know, I call them sometimes, at, you know, half jokingly, half seriously, the accountants of medicine, because they tend to really love their numbers. These guys are the ones that are dealing with diabetes patients, and so they're talking about glucose levels and insulin and hemoglobin A1C tests, and then when it's thyroid, it's TSH. And they really want to put everything in a nice little chart and look at numbers. They don't always want to deal with the fact that the patients in front of them are real living human beings who may not respond like numbers on a chart.
Or may not, exactly. And even if they are responding in numbers, it may not be the right numbers for them, especially if we're talking about arbitrary numbers. So
exactly.
There, you know, we have some questions from our audience members that I really need to address before we go on.
Great.
Samantha asked, do you recommend soy, and is there anything that doesn't have a desiccated thyroid that isn't based in a pig thyroid?
Okay. Soy is a really interesting question, and it's definitely one that comes up a lot, especially when I'm talking with the perimenopause and menopause crew, because we hear a lot about how soy can help with hot flashes or it can help with menopausal symptoms. And because soy is a phytoestrogen, it's a natural estrogen. It has estrogenic properties in the body, and that's how it can help in some cases with some symptoms of menopause. It's been shown to be very slightly effective for some people with some of the symptoms, not very extensively, but a little bit. But one of the things we have here in the United States is we think, well, if a little bit of soy is good, well, a whole lot of it must be even better. So I've talked with women who are doing soy milk, soy powders, protein shakes, soy smoothies, edamame, tofu, tempeh, and, you know, they're eating soy at every meal and every snack. And at that kind of consumption, when you're over-consuming soy, it goes from becoming a healthy food like the Asians eat to taking it to a level of becoming a medicine. You're taking so much that it is now becoming like taking a hormone pill. And no one would say, well, a little estrogen is good, so a whole lot must be better. I'll take 10 pills instead of one. So what the problem with the soy is, not only does it block the body's ability to absorb thyroid in some cases, but it also can actually be a trigger that causes or worsens thyroid problems in some women. So we have some women in their 40s and 50s who think they're doing the right thing for themselves from a health standpoint by eating all the soy, and they actually may be aggravating or even triggering a thyroid condition and making themselves feel worse than ever before. So a little bit of soy is fine, and eat it the way the Asians do, as a condiment in its natural fermented forms, and use it, you know, but it should not be a primary protein substitute for all of your food items, and you just want to stay away from the processed soy, soy in pills, and concentrated forms of soy that are very high in isoflavones, because those really are the ones that become triggers for further thyroid problems and hormone imbalances. And as far as the desiccated thyroid not being from swine, there are no prescription medications in the U.S. that are natural desiccated thyroid that are not from porcine or pig sources. There are some over-the-counter supplements from other parts of the world that are sold as nutritional supplements, not as thyroid support specifically, but as additional sort of thyroid nutrition supplements that do contain some desiccated bovine or cow thyroid. But these are not complete thyroid supplements. They're not considered to be a substitute for thyroid hormone medication in someone who is hypothyroid. They're considered to be more nutritional support that would complement a thyroid medication. So unfortunately, there is, for people who are either, opposed to meat or they are avoiding pork for dietary or religious reasons, there is no substitute in the United States for as far as a prescription medication for the natural desiccated thyroid that comes from pigs.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, years ago, they were selling bovine desiccated thyroid over the counter. Were they not?
Well, yeah. At some point they were, and there was a point at which the prescription thyroid also was made from bovine sources. It was cow sources, but that was probably about 25 years ago. And for the last two decades, all of the natural desiccated thyroid that's sold by prescription in the United States has been the porcine form, the pig thyroid form.
Great. Now here's a question, and men, listen up. Jack in Kansas asks, for the men in the audience, can you please tell us what we can do for our wives who we want to help with menopause?
Well, a couple of things that our guys can do to help us going through menopause. First of all, I love that Jack is even interested in it, because a lot of guys hear the word and they run screaming from the room. So, Jack, you are to be commended. Your wife is a lucky lady. But I think a couple of the things that our guys can do, number one, is they can encourage us and join us in eating healthier. One of the things that starts to happen to women in our 40s and 50s, whether or not we have a thyroid problem, we're starting to go into perimenopause, menopause, is we have some slowdown in our metabolism. And that means that we simply are going to have to increase our energy output through exercise and movement and cut back somewhat on what we eat. So that means that it's all the more important that every bite we put into our mouths counts, and we want to go with the best quality food, avoiding pesticides and hormones as much as we can, and we want to get some good exercise. So if a guy wants to support his wife through a healthier, happier perimenopause and menopause period, some of the best things he can do is not suggesting, hey, hon, let's go out and get that pizza, but instead maybe he can start helping, learning to cook with her, or finding some healthy places where you can go out if you want to have a date and go out to eat someplace that's going to have a little bit of healthier food options. And what better thing to do for your wife than to say, let's get out there and take a long walk, or let's get out and bike, or let's do some exercise, or have some sports together, or pick up a new fitness habit, or play on their Wii, fit machines, or whatever. Because a lot of the studies have shown that exercising with a partner, number one, we'll exercise longer, and we're much more likely to do it regularly. And exercise is one of the most important things that women can do to keep healthy and stay healthy during their perimenopause and beyond. So those would be two things right off the bat that I would immediately think that husbands and partners, boyfriends, spouses, and significant others can do to help the woman in their life go through a healthier perimenopause and menopause period.
Well, wow, that's very informative, and I hope you guys were taking notes on that. I'm testing you all afterwards. We're going to be taking a break right now, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with our guest, Mary J. Shulman, author of The Menopause Thyroid Solution, Overcome Menopause, by solving your hidden thyroid problems. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
In our Constitution, the Founding Fathers laid a path to an economy that should have kept Americans free and prosperous. How we the people were tricked off that path into a world of debt and deception reads like one of the great mystery novels of all time. American Free Press compares author Ellen Brown's new book, Web of Debt, to an eye-opening thriller that will leave you feeling like Neo in the Matrix. In Web of Debt, the mysterious and often shocking origins of today's ultimate financial crisis are exposed, starting with its distant beginnings to its present disastrous climax, as the reader is shown that the way to restore America's true wealth has been with us all along. Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, to see how America's money and future can become by and for the people once again.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us. But for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to EarthShare.org now, a public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Join the World March for Peace and Nonviolence, an international three-month event spanning seven continents and over 1 million participants. With endorsements from luminaries worldwide such as President Jimmy Carter, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. The World March for Peace and Nonviolence seeks to bring attention to the need to end war and occupation, reduce arms spending, and all forms of violence. Please visit theworldmarch.org.
It's called the Comfort Bike because that's what it feels like when you ride it. Comfortable. The Day 6 Comfort Bicycles produce ergonomic bikes that are the equivalent of a good ergonomic chair, allowing you a natural body position as you use it. With a fully adjustable backrest, wide seat, and a high handlebar design, the Day 6 bikes help you to rediscover the fun and freedom of riding. No hunching over, like when you ride a traditionally designed bike, no matter how fast you're going. Even mounting the bike is easy with a step-through designed frame. Please visit day6bicycles.com to see and learn more about this revolutionary design that is making bike riding a joy again for so many people.
This land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
Hello, everybody. Here we are back with Mary Schulman, author of The Menopause Thyroid Solution, Overcome Menopause by Solving Your Hidden Thyroid Problems. Mary's book is just phenomenal. You can go to www.menopausethyroid.com, and there, if I'm not mistaken, Mary has a checklist of symptomology. She also has the chapter of the book that you can download and read. There's a lot of really great information at the site, so I really recommend that you do it, and the book is great, so I know that I just love this book. I've already promised it to, you know, a dozen people. Thank you, Mary, and welcome back, and
Thanks, Basma.
Glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Now, we have a question from, again, we have a couple of questions. And this one is, I find kind of interesting. Janice in Oklahoma asks, if I have a hysterectomy, will I go through menopause?
Well, I guess that question would depend on what the treatment would be after the hysterectomy. But basically, like, if you're a woman who has not gone through menopause yet, so you have not stopped having your menstrual periods for a full year, and you have a hysterectomy to remove your uterus and or possibly one or both ovaries, you may go into what would be considered surgical menopause. If a woman has her uterus removed and her ovaries remain, or even one ovary remains, there's a good chance that you will not go into surgical menopause, because the ovary remaining will provide enough estrogen and enough hormones to prevent the onset of full menopause. But a complete total hysterectomy that includes both ovaries and the uterus will put a woman into immediate surgical menopause. If a woman has already gone through menopause and it's after the fact and she's having the uterus and or the ovary taken out, typically that's not going to trigger the same kind of rapid onset of symptoms, although some women, even post-menopause, if they've had surgery to remove the uterus and or the ovaries, may find a little bit of symptoms due to whatever residual hormones those organs were producing. But the age is really important, and any woman who's not through menopause who has surgical removal of both ovaries will in fact go into a surgical menopause.
And it's not pretty, girls. I've been there. We have another question. Judy in Iowa. Judy says, I take evening primrose oil. What does Mary think about that as a way of dealing with both thyroid and menopausal problems?
Well, evening primrose oil is a natural supplement. It's an essential fat. It can have some anti-prostaglandin effects, which means some women have actually found that it's helpful for menstrual cramps. It can help calm down the conversion of testosterone that can trigger a lot of hair loss in women. EPO, I've talked with a lot of natural physicians and experts, and I am not aware of anyone who recommends EPO specifically as a remedy for thyroid or for an underactive or an overactive thyroid. A lot of doctors are suggesting EPO for people who are having thyroid-related hair loss, because it does seem to help with the hair and the skin as residual side effects. Even if you're being treated for a thyroid problem, sometimes the hair and the skin are still problematic. So the evening primrose oil can be helpful for that. I know some women that have found that because of its anti-prostaglandin effects that it may help a little bit with some symptoms of menopause. But when it comes to the big list of the powerhouse natural supplements to help with menopause, I wouldn't put EPO at the top of the list. It's one that, you know, some people might find helpful here and there, but it's not one of my favorites that I would say, oh, definitely here's one that I have found helpful or that I think it should be on the list for someone in perimenopause or menopause. But again, for hair loss, I have found it extremely valuable.
And licorice in order for in regards to the adrenal and thyroid glands.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on licorice?
Licorice, in the deglycerinated licorice, the DGL form, not packets of Twizzlers at the movies, can actually help support the adrenals. But it's not a one supplement solution. If you have adrenal fatigue or adrenal hypofunction and underfunctioning adrenal system, or some level of adrenal burnout in some form or another, you probably need more than licorice. First of all, you need to be working with a practitioner, ideally, who's going to guide you through this. But there's a variety of supplements that have been found to be helpful for adrenal fatigue. And some of those include ashwagandha, astragalus, the actual adrenal cortex or natural adrenal glandular supplements in some cases, rhodiola, ginseng, ginger can be helpful, L-theanine. So there's a number of different supplements that are helpful, as well as B vitamins, vitamin C, and in some cases people actually take Isocort, which is a supplement that actually includes adrenal cortex. And in very difficult cases, cases of adrenal fatigue, doctors oftentimes will then also prescribe hydrocortisone in small doses. But an important thing to remember with adrenal fatigue or adrenal burnout is the medicines and the support are meant to help kind of gently cushion the adrenal system while it helps to repair itself. But it's not just popping pills to solve the problem. You have to transform your own lifestyle as well, which means you need to be getting the proper amount of sleep, which for most of us is 7.5 hours or more a night. You need to be looking at ways to reduce stress in your life, physical and emotional. That means limiting, you know, the foods and the toxins and processed foods. Those are all stressors on the body. And I also am a very firm believer that every day, just like you brush your teeth, you need to plan to schedule 15 to 20 minutes of some physiologically proven form of stress reduction. So I'm not talking about vegging out in front of the television set. I'm talking about meditation, prayer, breathing, yoga, guided meditation, guided imagery, doing a tape or an audio or something that actually will put you into that relaxation response where the cortisol levels are lowered, the heart rate lowers, the blood pressure lowers, and you are actually physiologically putting your body in a state of repair. Because you can take all the adrenal support supplements in the world, but if you're running a high-stress lifestyle, living on caffeine, and not getting enough sleep, you're never going to really, truly give yourself a chance to repair that adrenal system.
Well, thank you for addressing the body-mind connection, because for me that's a vital part of the process, Mary. Isn't it wonderful that so many people, you know, there was a time when you talked about the body-mind connection, the holistic paths to healing and wholeness, and this element of balance that comes from that. And people would look at you like, hello, excuse me, what were you talking about? And now it's so funny because myself as a healer, as a Reiki master, you know, now everywhere I go, I mean, today I was talking to one of the women at Medina University, who is one of the largest Catholic universities in the state of Michigan, and I mentioned that, and I says, I'm sorry, but here I am as a Catholic, and I said, but I do energy work. She was asking me one of the things that I did, and she says, oh, my brother and my sister do that, and I said, isn't it nice that even the Catholics are starting to understand the holistic nature of the body-mind connection? So I think that's very important, and thank you for addressing that.
Absolutely. I feel like it's a very important factor, and in particular I think for women in this 40 and above age group, because, you know, we're oftentimes living very high stress lifestyles, we're not eating as well as we could, we're not sleeping properly, we're not getting enough sleep, we are caretaking for everyone. I mean, a lot of people in the 40 to 60 range, not only are they caring for in some cases younger children like I am, or they have adult children, some of us are grandmothers. Some of us are caring for our elderly parents. You know, we're caring for everyone in the world, and we're not necessarily taking the time out for ourselves to eat right, to exercise, and to take that time to just kind of listen to our own body and allow ourselves that time to heal. And now, you know, as while the natural and alternative and holistic world knew it all along, even the mainstream medicine starting to come along. I mean, we've got neuroendocrinology is a specialty. This is the study of mind and hormones and how they go together. And so I'm loving that. I think some of the mainstream doctors are starting to come on board and realize that practicing stress reduction, incorporating mind-body approaches, it's not spooky, it's not woo-woo, it's good, sound medicine, and it makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely, and this is, now there's a few questions that I've asked, but we got one more question from Carrie in Louisiana. And Carrie asks, what kind of exercise does Mary suggest for menopause? I walk and do aerobics.
Okay. Well, that's great. Walking and aerobics are wonderful. I think whatever exercise you can do, want to do, and will do on a regular basis is the one you should do. But if people are looking to get into something and they're not doing something regularly, I mean, there's a couple of things that I recommend specifically in the book. First of all, every doctor I talked with said, look, if there's nothing else you're going to do, get out and get a walk as often as you can. And ideally, get out during the middle of the day if possible. So a lunchtime or midday walk is always going to be optimal for people because you're also going to be able to get a little bit of that extra vitamin D and sun exposure, which is so helpful for hormone balance and for energy. So that's definitely one factor. So walking is always going to be a good choice. Most people can do it without damaging joints and without causing pain to themselves. So even a slow walk is going to be a good way to get some exercise. Another thing that a lot of women have found especially helpful, and particularly as we get older and balance becomes an issue too, is rebounding, or basically what's known as a mini trampoline. And you can get these for less than $100 in some cases, and you can put it in a rec room or I have mine in my bedroom, and you get on it and you can, you know, watch a little television or listen to some music and you just gently bounce on it. Some, if you want to be very rigorous, you can jump up and down on it, but a lot of people just bounce, and what it does is it has a detoxifying effect because it helps to activate the lymph system. And the lymph system is our body's detox system, and it's this network of and channels of lymph nodes and lymph channels. And but unlike the bloodstream, which has the heart as a pump, the only thing that can move lymph out of the body and take all these waste products and move them out of the body is movement. And in particular, walking and rebounding are two especially good ways to move lymph. And then in the book itself, I also presented a particular exercise program that I have found that I love. It's created by a woman named Teresa Tapp, who's an exercise physiologist, and she's created a program that she calls T-Tap. And T-Tap activates muscles at multiple points of attachment so that when you do a particular exercise, you're not only working the muscle, but you're working four or five other muscles at the same time. So she's studied this and come up with a way. So if you do a 30 or 40 minute T-Tap workout, which I do on tape or on DVD in front of the television set, you're basically getting the benefits of 3-4, you know, times the amount of exercise. It's very fast working. People lose inches within a couple of weeks. I lost 12 inches on the T-Tap program after just 2 weeks of doing it. And it is also, it's designed to be able to be handled whether you're in great shape or whether you're really out of shape. And so, you know, Teresa has modifications and programs for people, as she says, who have more aches and pains, more candles on the cake, or more weight to lose. So there's a lot of different ways to be doing this program, and it's a lot of people have found it very effective without causing a lot of adrenal fatigue. They don't end up on the couch for 2 days to recuperate, and they're working the muscles, they're building muscle, which is one of the most important things we can do, but without ending up in misery, because we, you know, a lot of us are armchair athletes. We don't have the stamina to go do huge amounts of exercise, but T-Tap is a great way to stay in shape. And there's women that are 85 that are T-tapping every day and staying in really good shape doing it.
For those of you that are questioning, that was Teresa Tapp, T-A-P-P, and it's T-Tap. And Mary has a very extensive section on T-Tap in her book, including photographs that help you to see how the process is done and how the steps are in the correct positioning with T-Tap. So it's really an extraordinary, I can't tell you guys what a great book this is. Please go out and get it. Mary, one of the things that I noticed in the book, and here I just had it a minute ago and I have it right here, and it says here that on page 161, the biggest benefit of the Women's Health Initiative is that before the study was released, we had women taking drugs for preventative medicine with no evidence of prevention. Now, isn't that just the whole history of what we do? Over-medicate our people. Our patients are being given drugs that make these innocuous claims and then aren't necessarily proven or true. How do we handle this?
Well, it happens a lot, and certainly, you know, the Women's Health Initiative was the study that found that giving women the conjugated estrogen drugs like Premarin and Prempro was not only not helpful to women after menopause, but was extremely dangerous and could increase a whole laundry list of risk factors for all sorts of diseases and illnesses and problems. So, you know, a lot of people have said that, you know, we had many years of a very huge experiment on women because women were being told that taking hormones was going to help them, protect them from heart disease and protect them from cancers and would keep them young and make them feel well. And so women were routinely being put on hormones in their 40s and 50s, and women who were 10 and 12 and 15 years postmenopause were being given hormones. And what we've now discovered with the Women's Health Initiative findings is that, number one, women who are postmenopausal should almost never be on hormone therapy unless they are, you know, having very, very debilitating symptoms and are being very carefully monitored with their physicians. But it's not something that should be a lifelong medication. Number two, we've discovered that for many women, there is no preventative benefit to these hormones. But what we also have discovered, because women went the other direction, they got scared and they got terrified and they didn't think there was anything then for them if they were suffering from debilitating symptoms. And what we now know is that if you're a woman who is in perimenopause or the early stages of menopause and you're suffering very extremely, like you're really having debilitating hot flashes, that a short course of the lowest dose of an estrogen medication may very well be the best possible solution. Certainly women want to explore natural options and mind body and lifestyle changes, and I've talked about a lot of those in the book. But if you tried everything and you're still having 20 hot flashes a day and night sweats all night, you very well may need to go on some medication for your quality of life. And here what we know is that the transdermal and the cream forms of these medications, so if you can avoid the pills but go to the patches and the creams, and the bioidentical forms, meaning the estradiol or the natural progesterone, are going to have the lowest risks. They all carry risks. I am not a believer in the crusade from the bioidentical movement that says every bioidentical is safe, you can take them all your life, you can do it forever, and there's no side effects or risks. But what I do agree with is that they are less risky than these conjugated estrogens, these synthetic and crazy progesterones that don't have anything to do with human form and that we know have caused problems because we've been studying them for 50 years and we see the dangers that they have for some women. So it's one of those things where if you need it, don't be afraid to use it, but try other options first, and when you need it, make sure that you're working with your doctor to use the safest form at the lowest dose for the shortest amount of time.
You know, we've only got a couple more minutes, and I really wanted to touch on this, Mary, before we ended. What are your thoughts on the new health care reform that's being introduced by the Obama administration?
Well, I have to admit that I am a more of an individualistic sort of view of health. I am very focused on thyroid patients and trying to protect our rights and worrying about getting people diagnosed and treated. So I haven't had as much time to be as aware of the bigger picture of all the individual details. That said, I'm really happy that it's being talked about. I'm happy that our country is looking at this issue. I am frustrated all the time by hearing from people who don't have any insurance, can't get insurance, or have been kicked out of insurance because they have thyroid conditions considered pre-existing and no one's going to treat them, which doesn't make any sense because that only makes them sicker and they end up in worse shape. I think whatever solution comes out of it, though, is we're never going to be able to bypass the fact that patients are going to have to be their own advocates, we're going to have to be knowledgeable, we're going to have to be empowered, and we are never going to be able to assume that anyone, whether it's the government or the health care plan we're in or the insurance program that we're in or the HMO or anybody else, is going to be looking out for our best interests as well as we can ourselves. So I sort of feel like whatever system comes out, and I hope that everybody can come together and come up with something that they're going to agree on. I don't know, and I have my doubts based on what I see. But whatever system we do end up with, my philosophy is you're still going to have to be smart,
patient, and you're going to have to navigate that system, and you're going to have to be looking out for your own best interests, because I don't care who it is, they're probably not going to be as interested in your health and wellness as you are personally.
Well, there you go, folks. That was Mary J. Shulman, author of The Menopause Thyroid Solution, Overcome Menopause by Solving Your Hidden Thyroid Problems. You can go and read part of the chapter of the book at www.menopausethyroid.com, and Mary's just a wealth of information. Thank you, Mary, so much for being with us again. It's been wonderful. Gosh, I always leave thinking, oh, my God, there's a million more questions. We are going to have you back again soon, I hope.
Oh, thanks, Beth. I'd love to be back on any time.
Okay, we're going to count on it. Thanks, Mary. And, folks, for those of you that will be here next Tuesday, Howard Zinn, author of The People's History of the United States, will be our guest on Tuesday, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern on September 29th. Thank you very much, everybody, and have a great night, and let the people speak.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the table, by the relief of the fast, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering, if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest, to the Gulf Stream water, yeah, this land is made for you and me.